Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley and I'm joined tonight for a discussion of Star Trek Into Darkness by Mike.
Hey guys.
Returning after a long, long absence.
Too long.
Yes.
Brought me back.
And our friend Adam.
Hello.
Hi. Now, Adam's been on the show a couple times. But this is a different, this is Adam Thaz. This is not Adam Risky, who's now a regular contributor, so this could be confusing.
I told him he's other Adam now.
Other Adam?
Yeah.
Okay.
Risky's taken over the website, essentially.
So. Okay. Yeah. So, you could be Adam Prime.
Oh.
You could be Beta.
Beta. Yes, Adam Beta. Beta. Only if you have to say it like that.
Like Picard.
Yes.
All right. Then that's what it is.
Adam Beta.
Remember, you can find our website at fthismovie.net. You should go there and read stuff and check in every day. You can find us in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/fthismovie. And you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Mike and I, a couple years ago, did the original 2009, I say the original, the 2009 Star Trek reboot.
We sure did.
So it's good that you're back. That was, I think, our 200th post when we posted that show. So that was over 500 posts ago. But it was only about a year ago. So
yeah, right.
We're cranking it out, I guess, is my point.
We are.
So we're going to talk about Star Trek Into Darkness. We're probably not going to talk spoiler-free for that long. We might
it's
just give a...
hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially because of the marketing. So we'll probably just give a quick, like, did you like it, did you not? And then we're going to go into spoilers. So hopefully you've seen it already. If you haven't, go see it. Come back and listen to the show. But before we trek into darkness, Mike.
Yes.
Have you seen anything good lately?
I'm glad you asked.
me too.
I have.
It's a stall technique. I'm trying to think of... I have to go see Star Trek Into Darkness. So while you talk, I'll be back.
I'm going to take advantage of the three of us being together. And I'm going to say that on Tuesday, Cloud Atlas came out.
Yes, it did.
And I say I'm taking advantage of the three of us being together because it was our favorite movie last year.
Yes.
All three of us. If you want a more articulate reason why it's such a good movie or why it means so much to us, listen to the end of the year podcast where Patrick discusses Cloud Atlas.
Yeah, I don't think I was very articulate though. I think I was just like, I love it. Good job, movies.
Well, that's pretty much all I have.
Yeah.
I do love it. I got it on Tuesday. I watched it, showed it to my wife that night. It's just a special movie. And I realize it's not for everyone. I get that, but I still encourage everyone to see it, because I think whether you like it or don't like it, chances are it's unlike anything you've seen.
I agree.
And it should be applauded. In that, it's one of those movies I can't wrap my head around it, in that how, I don't know how they made it. I don't know how, I would look at that footage and just think, now what?
Right.
The way it's edited, the way it's put together, the way it's, the story is told. It's brilliant and it's unique and I love it and it moves me every time. And the end of that music is just unreal.
That music's great. I was in, Target this morning and they have over by the movie section, they always have like monitors playing commercials and stuff. And one of the commercials was for, I just heard the piano from Cloud Atlas and I was like, Oh,
yeah.
Oh, and I cried in Target. I didn't really. Well, wouldn't be the first time. Won't be the last.
Well, I was also
they're out of Legos.
but even seeing it, that was the I think third time I've seen it. And it continued. I mean, by the end of that movie, I feel just as emotional.
Yeah, it's super good. We got an email earlier this week from Saul, our Canadian friend and fan. And if I were better prepared, I could pull it up, but I didn't know you were going to talk about it. He had just seen it and really loved it.
Great.
The same way. Yeah, he said, like, wow, I'm really glad that you guys kind of recommended this because it's really great and special. So
good. I'm happy to hear that.
Hopefully people will start to discover it now because it seems like a lot of people kind of skipped it when it was in theaters.
Sure.
Which broke my heart that it didn't get what it deserved.
Well, but that it's not that kind of movie, I don't think. Yeah. It's the kind of movie that people might discover 5 or 10 years from now.
I feel maybe it's wishful thinking, but I feel people will. that yeah. it's a movie, or at least maybe I'm being hopeful, but I don't think it's a movie that will go away. I certainly hope not.
No, I think it'll have fans. I don't think it's ever going to, I don't think the general consensus is ever going to change. I think enough people kind of didn't like it for a lot of different reasons.
I believe it's Time Magazine.
Oh, yeah, one of the
worst. The worst.
Was it the worst?
The worst movie.
Good job, Time Magazine.
Of the year.
Way to shit the bed.
To be fair,
they saw four movies.
Again, I understand it might not be for everyone, but to say it's the worst.
Which is just trying to, make a point. It's so obnoxious.
I know.
I was having a discussion the other day that I think that might be in my all-time favorite movie.
It's great.
Like, definitely one of my favorite theater movie going experiences.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed every second of it.
Yeah. That movie's good. So check it out now that it's on DVD and Blu-ray. What else besides Cloud Atlas?
I saw Life of Pi.
All right.
Did you ever get around
I still
it?
Haven't seen
Have
it.
You
no,
seen that?
I'm the
I
worst.
It's fine to quote at this movie. Like, there's not, I feel like maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah.
I mean, I was never bored, but it's one of those movies that, as I sit here right now, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. People keep telling me I need to give it a chance because I'm bored when I think about it, but people keep saying it's better than you think it will be.
Sure, and it probably was better than I thought it would be. It took me a while to see it, obviously, but I don't say I was underwhelmed, but I mean, it was fine. Like, I enjoyed it as I was watching it, but it hasn't necessarily stuck with me.
No.
So.
All right. Adam, how about you? I'm sorry, Adam Beta.
Adam Beta. I'll probably bring up, I don't know if this happened to you yet, like, all of a sudden Netflix realizes what type of movie you're into, and then they just keep, recommending.
Does Netflix carry porn?
I was going to say, mine is all lesbian.
Caged heat.
It's not a porn. Please.
But it realized that I'm into post-apocalyptic movies.
Oh.
And,
post-apocalyptic lesbian.
Yes, yes. I watched the movie Monsters.
Yes.
I really liked that movie.
Interesting, okay.
I thought that, I had a conversation with Mike. This is going to be really hard not calling you, but I'm just saying. it was done for, no money.
Yeah.
There was no money put into it, and I thought that it had so much to say about so many different things watching the movie, and I was really, really impressed by it.
Perhaps I need to give it another chance. I saw it a couple years ago, and I didn't dislike it. I was impressed by the accomplishment, although I felt like they missed an opportunity and should have called it People.
Okay.
there are very few monsters, is what I'm saying. There's not a lot of monsters. But of course, the title may not be literal. And maybe it just wasn't what I was expecting. I don't remember it that well. I just remember thinking the flaws were what I took away from it instead of really liking it. But I need to see it again, obviously.
Okay.
What else besides Monsters?
Well, you know what? I'm going to take this opportunity to bring something up.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember. I think it was about 2 years ago where we did our favorite superhero movies of all time.
I do remember.
And the worst superhero. He's huffing and puffing because he knows it's coming.
We're going here?
Yeah. And I walked into his basement the other day. And do you know what was all that he had in his basement?
Well, you need to set it up first. What was one of Mike's least favorite superhero movies of all time?
It was this movie called Hellboy 2.
I remember it. The Golden Army.
Yes, I do
remember that.
And I said I liked that
movie. I remember that, yeah. I remember you saying that you were a big fan.
Yeah, so and Mike said he hated it. He thought it was one of the worst. And imagine my surprise when I walked into his basement to see not just a copy of Hellboy 2, but action figures from Hellboy 2 in his basement.
It's my avatar. All right. If I can
hear
myself, I'll be very brief. I think all of us have filmmakers or musicians or writers or whatever that everyone tells you is great. And you see their work, and it just doesn't click for you. And it's happened to me a bunch of times. And quite often, I like to you know, go back and revisit that person's work in the hopes that maybe second time around something will click. Guillermo del Toro was one of those filmmakers. More often than not, my first impression was probably where I'm going to stay. But for him, for whatever reason, something changed. And I saw what other people saw. And yes, I was, when I'm going through his movies, I was dreading getting to Hellboy 2. I love Hellboy 2. If we were to do that podcast today, probably be in the other top five.
Yes!
I love Hellboy 2. It just, I'm a big fan of Hellboy the comic, and I like the first movie, and I realize now, and I don't mean this as a criticism, that I think Del Toro took Mike Mignola, who created Hellboy, took his vision and put it up on the screen. Like, that seemed very much a Mike Mignola piece, whereas Guillermo del Toro, his fingerprints are all over Hellboy 2. Mm-hmm. So, as well as Mike Mignola. It's a perfect blend, and it's just a fantastic movie. So if you haven't seen Hellboy 2...
The Golden Army?
The Golden Army. I recommend it. It's wonderful.
Did you happen to reverse your position on Mimic?
No, actually, I still haven't
rewatched Mimic.
Yeah, I didn't rewatch it either.
Since 1997, I saw it.
And it's hard knowing that he doesn't like it.
Right.
He's not behind it. So.
Right. But there's a version now that he's more behind.
Correct.
Okay.
But I don't think completely.
I still haven't seen that one.
I haven't either.
And where did you stand on Blade 2?
I love Blade 2.
Okay.
And my memory of Blade 2 was seeing it with Adam Beta and our friend Nick. And all I remember is being exhausted. Like, the way the raid exhausted me.
Yeah.
I remember Blade 2 exhausting me. Like, it just seemed like an overload. Now watching it, I don't quite know why I felt that way. I mean, it's there's a shit ton of action, but it wasn't as much of an overload as I remembered.
Maybe that's just because movies have changed so much since 2002.
Very well could be, but
that's become the standard now,
right? And I think when I started rewatching these movies, I started with Blade 2, and really loved it, and then went to Kronos, which I hadn't seen before, which is fine.
Yeah, and I still haven't seen it. It's coming out. Criterion's putting it out. I think
it's out.
Oh. Criterion just put it out, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Right.
They should put out Hellboy 2, The Golden Army.
They absolutely
should. I remember being...
I think I should see that movie.
I remember being at Comic-Con last year with you, and you were looking specifically for Hellboy 2 stuff.
It's so good.
I love how you say it's my Avatar, as though Avatar is like a fill-in for Vietnam. Like, well, that's my Vietnam.
I just mean your opinion may have changed on Avatar.
Oh, because my opinion hasn't changed on Vietnam.
Well, that's good.
I'm still against it. I'm still opposed to the war, you guys. I'm opposed to the Vietnam War.
He's sticking to Patrick, what have you seen?
Okay, I'm going to talk about four movies fairly quickly. I saw Parker, the Jason Statham movie that came out in January, and Jason Statham movies usually come out in sort of the off months. You get one in January and one in September, usually. And they're usually, like, fairly cheap, and Lionsgate puts them out, and they're not great, but they're fine because they deliver. And Parker was directed by Taylor Hackford, who's been, like, nominated for Oscars, and I thought, well, this seems like it deserves better than a January release, right? No, Parker is garbage.
Parker does
not know what movie it wants to be. It wants to be sort of the grown-up, more serious Jason Statham movie. And then he hooks up with Jennifer Lopez, and it's this weird Elmore Leonard thing, and then it's a remake of Point Blank, which was remade as Payback, and now remade again as Parker, and then there's these fight scenes that are, like, the most violent fight scenes you've seen in a long... Oh, this doesn't seem to fit in with this movie.
I realize it's probably not your intent, but sold.
It's super boring.
Really?
Like, everything I just described is like, that's a new movie every 10 minutes. Super violent fight scenes, I'm in. It felt like a 4-hour movie.
Oh, that's
it
is.
Bad. It's super boring. Big disappointment. I watched Kill List on Netflix Instant. Ben Wheatley, is that his name, the director?
Mm-hmm.
I watched his first movie. Which is called Down Terrace, which I didn't love. It's on Netflix Instant. And then I saw Kill List, which I liked better, although I still didn't love it. And it's weird, because on paper, that's a movie that I would love, because I like a movie that starts out as one thing and then becomes a completely other thing, which Kill List does. But for some reason, it's well made. It just didn't click with me. And then I saw his new movie, Sightseers, it's called.
Okay.
Which is about a couple taking like a little vacation in the countryside and people start dying, not to give anything away. And it's a comedy.
Always funny.
Yeah, it was, I found it very one note. Like, the thing happens once, and then the thing happens 9 more times, and then the movie's over. And it's like, okay, well, I'm cracking up. So maybe Ben Wheatley just is not for me. I know he has a bunch of fans. Maybe I'll come back to him, and he will be my Hellboy 2. I don't know. I've now seen all of his movies in the span of about a week and a half, and none of them really I would recommend. Although, none of them are bad.
Keyless has its fan base, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. It got talked about a whole lot. I really wanted to see it last year when it was out, because people really like it. And of the three, I think that's probably the most interesting. Like, if you're going to watch one, I would say watch Kill List, which is on Netflix Instant, if you're interested. And then the last movie I'll talk about is I saw Black Rock, which was played as part of the Chicago Critics Film Festival, but I wasn't able to go because I instead went to see All the Boys Love Mandy Lane, which was a mistake. Black Rock is directed by Katie Asselton, who's on The League. Oh, do you guys watch The League?
I've watched it.
Okay. Yep. She's the girl The League. The girl. She's married to Mark Duplass, who wrote the screenplay for Black Rock. It's Katie Asselton and Lake Bell and Kate Bosworth go on a trip to this little island, and bad things start to happen. Okay. I don't even know what to say about it. It's very flawed. There's things I like about it. It's kind of a mess.
Do they make out at any point? Because if they do, it'll wind up being recommended to me.
They don't. Netflix. They do not make out, I'm sorry to say. Not everyone keeps their clothes on all the time, I will say that. All
right.
But it's not in like a sexy way. It showed at a couple festivals last year. It might have even showed at Sundance, and I think people kind of laughed at it. And I can sort of understand why, although I think it's better than that.
Okay.
But part of the problem is that it's like it's sort of single-minded and it's very sincere sort of in what it's about. So you almost want to laugh as like, this is kind of silly, but it takes itself very seriously. I don't know what to say.
Okay.
I can't really recommend Black Rock either. So of everything we've talked about, what, Cloud Atlas sounds like the, and Hellboy 2, I hear, is
Hellboy
very good.
Very, very good. We can talk about Miami Connection.
Would you like to?
I would love to talk about Miami Connection. I could do a Miami Connection podcast.
There's a lot to say about that one.
Yeah. Does it hold up on repeat viewings?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think it helped because we watched it.
You're showing it to a new audience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're showing it to a new audience. And it goes a lot faster. Like, you don't realize how short the movie is until I saw it the second time. I was like, oh, that was...
Could you go home and just throw it on by yourself?
No, I think that Miami Connection needs to be viewed with like at least 4 people.
Okay.
To really,
we only watched it with 3. So
okay, we can do it with 3 people.
Did we fail?
We can do it with 3 people. 3 people's fine.
Yeah, that movie is very entertaining, and I'm usually not an advocate of like so bad it's good or like watch this ironically, but I don't know how else you would watch that movie.
What I love about it is
the music.
Well, yeah, the music's great. Dragon Sound. But I've had this conversation with Mike that you can't set out to make a bad movie.
Right.
And this movie has so much love in it. Like, loved this movie. And, it's just...
Yeah, those are the best kinds of bad movies, are the movies where they mean it.
Yeah,
and that's absolutely why, like, I would never say that Ed Wood was the worst director of all time or that Plan 9 from Outer Space is the worst movie of all time. Because
it's Cloud Atlas, first of all.
Because they're trying really hard, you know, and everybody means it. And that's when they're just kind of going through the motions, it's not the same. Or when people, now it's very sort of fashionable to deliberately make a shitty movie, and I just have no patience for that.
Agreed.
Yeah, Miami Connection is great. All right, let's talk about Star Trek Into Darkness. So, like I said, we're going to talk very quickly, spoiler-free, just kind of give recommendations, and then we'll get into spoilers and talk more in depth about the movie. Let's go around the table, starting with you, Adam Beta. Your reactions to Star Trek Into Darkness.
I looked at this movie from two points of view when I saw it, because you have to...
You watched it in 3D?
I did watch it in 3D.
Okay.
But, which I don't recommend.
No,
I thought it was way too dark. There were moments where
Well, listen, it's not called Star Trek Into Light.
Okay, point taken.
That's the
stupidest
joke.
Yes, we left. Did you see it in 3D, Patrick?
Hell no.
Okay.
Well, although there was a lot of stuff in it that I was like, was that just for the 3D, the spears, or even like...
Yeah.
Give me your arm. It's like, here you go. Like, oh, well, okay, I get it.
I went to go see like a special premiere showing, and I thought it was just a regular showing. And then we sit down, and they hand out the 3D glasses, and I was like, I kind of didn't want to see it this way, but all right, since we're here, let's go for it. But I look at it. I'm a very big Star Trek fan, so like I'm looking at it as in, how does it measure up in the Trek universe?
Okay,
and how does it measure up in the movie universe?
Okay.
As a movie, it's good. I enjoyed a lot of it. It was fun. I don't think it's as good as the previous reboot. And I would see it again. If somebody's like, yeah, I'm going to go see Star Trek, I'd go see it again in a heartbeat. It was fun. But then in the Trek universe, I'm looking at all the Trek movies. I'm like, well, this is one of the better Trek movies. I mean, it's definitely better than, like, you know, Final Frontier and stuff like that, you know.
It's not fair to name the worst.
Okay. But, you know, it's like, when you're looking at it, I'm like, okay, is this is comparable to me to Voyage Home. Like, Voyage Home, I would say, is one of my more favorite ones. And I liked this one about as much as I liked Voyage Home.
Okay.
So.
There were way fewer whales in this one, though.
Yes.
I'm just making sure I saw the right movie. Okay. All right, cool. So there it is, everyone. As good as The Voyage Home. Mike?
Good night. I saw it. Unfortunately, I had to see it today. Today's the first time I saw it. So
okay.
I would have liked to have had a little more time to sleep on it.
Eh.
But I mean, because well,
we
I have
wait while you go to nap.
Yeah, you guys don't mind if we do this another day. I have a feeling I might feel differently down the road. However, I will say my initial reaction is, overall, I enjoyed it. The last act, I have some problems with. But it's a cast that I really love. And I, you know, maybe it's just, I just want to spend time with that cast. I want to spend time in that world. That might have something to do with why I enjoyed it as much as I did. So I guess overall, I would recommend it, but I'll wait till probably we get to a little more spoilery territory to get more specific. But I haven't read any reviews. I don't know what other people are saying other than like Twitterverse. I understand that it has plenty of detractors, and maybe Patrick is
lots of people love it, and lots of people, can you believe it, that it's either great or horrible,
right?
And you're an idiot if you think one thing or the other.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, I overall I liked it.
Okay. Great. Then we get to play another round of Patrick is the Asshole.
Don't worry. If it's anything like the Green Lantern one, I'll wind up hating this movie by the end of it.
But I felt pretty comfortable with Green Lantern. Like, this movie's not very good.
And you were right.
Yeah. Star Trek Into Darkness is weirdly frustrating for me. If you guys have listened to the show on the 2009 reboot, obviously I was a big fan of that, and that was sort of what kicked me off getting way into Star Trek, and since then I've been way, way into it. So I was really excited about the movie, and I saw it once and couldn't get over all of the things that were disappointing me and frustrating me, even though it's fine, you know, like, the cast is good, and they're back, and it has lots of energy, and the action sequences are well done. I mean, there's a lot of things it has going for it, so, and I walked out of it just feeling really frustrated, because it's not like it's a bad movie, but so many things didn't sit right with me.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it again a day later, and found myself enjoying it more because I was able to just sort of let go of all the things that had frustrated me. It's still the same movie. It's a movie, I think, that has a bunch of problems, and not just because, not just Star Trek problems. You know, that's, Film Drunk had a thing about, like, a guy wrote a thing where, like, once again, a bunch of imperfect people are demanding perfection from movies. It's like, oh, so if you don't like Star Trek Into Darkness, you're demanding perfection? That's right. Not fair.
Somebody gave somebody millions of dollars to create this. I would hope that they would expect perfection out of it.
Nobody expects perfection. I don't ever expect perfection. The 2009 Star Trek is almost as far from a perfect movie as you can get, but, like, there's the things that work in it really work, and it left me wanting more. And I feel like this Star Trek, when it ended, I'm not very excited about the prospect of a sequel. Mm-hmm. Again, I like the cast, and I want them to keep making Star Trek movies or whatever. Maybe I'm just ready for it to be put in somebody else's hands.
Sure.
Because, yeah, when the first one ended, I was like, oh, they should make one right now, and then I can watch it over and over again. And now the sequel is here, and I'll definitely watch it again. I'll probably enjoy it again as more of an action movie, because I think all that stuff is pretty well done, and I do like the cast and the setting and everything. But I'm very frustrated by the movie, and I'm just so sick of having this response to these things that I should love.
Are you frustrated as a
movie?
Okay.
As a movie and as a Star Trek movie, but okay. No, my problems with the movie, and again, this is one of these things that the backlash, the internet has just ruined everything, and I've done this rant lots of times, but like the immediate backlash is like, well, you're just nitpicking because it's not the Star Trek that you want it to be. And that's true, but that's not my problem with the movie.
Okay.
But now, obviously, we have to get more in-depth, so let's get into spoilers. If you have not seen Star Trek Into Darkness, they have gone to great lengths to not spoil anything in the marketing, so I would advise that you turn this off now and come back after you've seen the movie. If you have seen it, please keep listening. All right, now we're in spoilers.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Adam, were you aware of the big sort of twist, if we can get into that?
Sure, that's a good place to start.
There was two twists to me.
Okay, what are the...
The first twist is Khan. Right.
The second twist is, he's not that good. No, I'm just kidding.
The second twist was, it mirrored Wrath of Khan, uh-huh. In the sense that... Mm-hmm.
That's why I couldn't wait to get to it.
Cool, you went right to the fuck-off point.
Yeah. Like, the Wrath of Khan, where Spock is the one who initially enters the engine room, or engine, whatever, yeah. and gets radiation poisoning, and then they flip it, and now it's Kirk.
Isn't that clever?
Yeah, I mean...
When Scotty, you know, warns Kirk, like, you can't go in there.
Yeah.
You're not going to come out alive. I thought this is some... Like, that's the wink.
Right.
But yes. They're not going to actually
do it.
Holy cow. When they, yep. I was flabbergasted.
And
like,
again,
that's where...
To what end?
Exactly. To what end?
This is... spoilers for Iron Man 3, if you haven't seen Iron Man 3. This is the second big summer movie I've seen in 2 weeks that kills a major character for 10 minutes for no reason. Mm-hmm. Only to bring them back with no consequences. And I, for the life of me, can't figure out. In this movie, obviously, Iron Man 3, it makes even less sense. In this movie, it's obviously like, well, because that's what they did in Wrath of Khan.
In I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No,
but
go
like,
ahead.
In Wrath of Khan, they kill off Spock.
Yes.
And then they spend an entire movie getting him back.
And the intention wasn't to bring him back.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
killed him off
yeah.
because they were killing Spock.
Yes, exactly.
Like, it wasn't just to pad out the finale of their movie. I don't want to just immediately start ranting.
No.
Do you want to talk about what we liked first?
Well, we can. We'll get into what we liked. But let's deal with the Khan stuff up front.
Okay.
Because... Again, I feel like if I come out as somebody who says, this movie had a lot of problems for me and I was disappointed, the immediate reaction is like, well, you're just pissed because they did Khan and this isn't Khan, and so you're mad that it's not your Khan. And that's not true. No. Listen, the twist, and I knew the twist going in just
yes.
because it was poorly guarded. I wish they wouldn't have tried to keep it a secret, because it only exists now to disappoint, because the big reveal now is, we have no imagination. We're doing a sequel to Star Trek, yeah. So we're going to do Khan again, because that's what they did in the last part, too. And I think they should have been more upfront. I mean, to the point where people said, are you doing Khan? And like a fourth grader, they said, no, we're not. You know, put it out there and just say, yeah, we're redoing Khan. And then do Khan differently. Like, yes. I'm okay with that. That's fine. They kind of already did Khan in the 2009 one. Like, Nero was basically Khan, except he wanted revenge on Spock instead of Kirk. They basically already did it. There was a point, so that he says, I'm Khan, and I just want to put both my middle fingers up in the theater, because there's no reason for it, really, except that's what people expect. But a guy down in front in the theater goes, yes! So, like, it's working for someone.
A girl next to me gasped and put her hands over her mouth. So, yeah, so my thought was, well, then maybe that's why they did it. Because I'm more in line with you. I don't know why. What's the point of even covering it up? I would have preferred they just came out and said Khan,
If you were really a Star Trek fan, too, and I'm going to really put myself in Nerdville here, but the guy I was sitting next to, the scene where Khan, before you know he's Khan, basically levels all those Klingons, I just turn to him, I go, oh, he's an augment. That must be Khan. Right. Like, I mean, I knew the second that happened that, oh, okay, this is who they are.
Right.
And so that was ruined for me in that sense. Because who are you doing that fan service for? You're doing that for people who have seen Trek before.
Well, this, and again, this speaks to the question of the movie, which is, who is this for? Because it's very obvious that they want to make a Star Trek movie for people who could give a shit about Star Trek. J.J. Abrams has said as much in interviews. And more than his last Star Trek movie, he's turned this movie into Star Wars. Like, I'm pretty sure he's going to make a kick-ass Star Wars movie, because this movie is all, like, spaceships chasing each other and gunfights and fistfights and, like, it's way more Star Wars than it is Star Trek. And, okay, again, my complaints are not, this isn't Star Trek, because I can take, I'm fine with a different interpretation. And my problem isn't even, why are they doing Khan when this isn't Khan? Although, again, it's such a lack of imagination. They went to such lengths in the first movie to differentiate themselves. There's a timeline split, right? Mm-hmm. So all the stuff that happened still happened. They made it very clear. This is just a new timeline. So anything can happen. We can do anything now, and it doesn't fuck with the canon, right? Mm-hmm. And so they immediately go do the most famous Star Trek story. It's like, guys, you could have done anything. Why are you doing Khan again? But okay, let me get over that disappointment. Now do it well. There's a point, you know, I have all these sort of logical nitpicks, and I understand that this is where the fights are now, because people write on the internet like, oh, what about this and this and this and this, and these are nitpicks, and then somebody says, well, now you're just nitpicking as like a Star Trek nerd. But these logical nitpicks, like, why would Khan have to pretend to be John Harrison? Yes. Who is he guarding his identity from?
Right.
And also, if you're going to talk about the timeline split, Khan was frozen 300 years ago before the timeline split, so technically there's only one Khan. He exists in the prime timeline. He's dead. He blew up with the Reliant. But so how can now there be another one who's a British white guy? Okay, whatever.
You know, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. These are things that are like nitpicks. And yeah, you can, the movie has a lot of plot holes, but these are not my problems with the movie necessarily. There's a point where it's revealed that he's Khan, and you could tell that they're starting to do Space Seed, not so much Wrath of Khan. And they get on board the other ship. What was it called?
Is it the Prometheus?
No, don't even say that word.
I'm sorry.
the big giant warship, you know, basically.
Millennium Falcon?
The big giant warship. And Khan is sort of helping them, and there's a really good line where he says, why is he...
Why is he helping us?
And he says,
I think we're
helping him. Yes. And at that moment, I thought, oh, they're going to do something different with Khan. Like, I didn't need them to be on the same team, but that he's more of this weird third party that, like, will I thought they were going a different direction. But then as soon as, we're in spoilers, Peter Weller is sort of revealed to be the main bad guy, and you're like, oh, okay, well, this is different, even though the Peter Weller stuff is this obnoxious, like, 9/11 metaphor, because they, or Iraq war metaphor, I guess I should say, because they, you know, thought, like, oh, this movie needs to be about more than what it's about, so let's make it all this obnoxious Iraq war metaphor. But it's okay, because we have a little 9/11 card at the end. So Peter Weller is revealed to be the big bad guy, and you think, oh, they're going to do something different with Khan. But then, within 5 minutes, Peter Weller is taken out, and then we just go and do Wrath of Khan, yeah, for, like, shot for shot.
Yeah.
And again, you just have to ask yourself, like, why are they doing this? Is it just fan service? And if it is, do they not understand that the fans don't want to see that?
Exactly. Like, that was my big question. Because you're absolutely right. If it's fan service, and you're trying to speak to me, the Star Trek fan, that you're giving me exactly what I don't want.
Right.
Exactly what I've had that
right
already,
and it was really good.
It was great.
And you're not doing as good a job.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, that boggled my mind.
I like the subtle fan service. Like
I think we're gonna argue about this, but go ahead.
But like when he asks Chekhov to get a red shirt, and red shirt, and like you could see the look on Chekhov's face, like, oh,
sure.
But like, there was one nerd in my theater who went,
and that was probably me in the back of the movie theater. It was like, okay, like that type of fan service doesn't bother me as much, because only if you're a fan are you gonna get it, and just go, you know, and that it doesn't interrupt the.
And here's plot. And here's me being Star Trek asshole, and this is interesting because, again, when 2009 comes out, I'm not Star Trek asshole. So I am a monster of this movie's making, because the first one made me into this nerd, and now I come back to the sequel and I'm like, haha, I have learned, and now you suck, because there's a bunch of that in the movie. The red shirt thing didn't bother me, but there's all these little throwaway things that are supposed to be fan service, but it's like the most obvious obnoxious fan service. It's like a reference to the Gorn or Nurse Chapel, okay, or, hey, what are you doing with that tribble in the middle of a scene that's not about tribbles at all? And obviously it's setting up this other thing at the end. The first time I didn't notice it as much. And the second time I was like, wait, he's having a conversation with Khan right now about, like, you can't even keep your own crew alive. It's super serious life and death shit. And he literally goes, Bones, what are you doing with that tribble? Like, there's so much of that in this movie. There's so much, like, coincidence and people just being saved at the last second by an explosion. It's like this crazy ADD movie where, like, we're in the middle of a conversation and then, blah, our ship gets rammed and we're on to the next thing. Or, like, oh, we're going to die. Oop, this guy caught us. Or we're about to get shot. Oop, that guy got shot. There's so much. If you see it a second time, just pay attention to how many scenes are sort of, the way that they get out of every scene is with some sort of like, and then this happens. There's an explosion. Or, and
I've never seen him this fired up before.
I'm sorry. And again, I didn't hate the movie. And these are nitpicks. But this is a genuine frustration. And maybe people would call this a nitpick, but I don't think it is. I like movies where, JB talked about this a little bit about Iron Man 3 on the last podcast. And the example that I always point to is Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which Mike hates, I know, which means in 2 years he's going to like it.
I love that movie. I like the movie. You like the movie.
Wait until his basement is full of Ethan Hunt toys.
I liked Ghost Protocol.
Whatever. The thing that I like about that movie is it keeps finding ways to, like, put the screws to the people. And, like, there's all of these problems, and they have to figure their way out of problems. And that's great. And this movie tries to do that, but it essentially has one problem, which is the equipment is malfunctioning. Mm-hmm. Like, every time there's a problem, it's because, like, but this is broken. And then we get to this thing at the end where it's like, can we beam him up? No. Can we beam someone down? Yeah. And they do. And then they beam Spock down and he fights Khan and that's fine. And then, I don't know, 3 minutes later, can you beam him up? No. Can you beam me down? Did we just fucking cover this? And then they do! And then they beam Uhura down! And it's like, it's just bad screenwriting. And that's really ultimately what it comes down to. And I keep giving Damon Lindelof a chance. I keep giving Kurtzman and Orsi a chance. And they, I just have to believe they're bad writers who don't know what they're doing. Because this movie has a really problematic script. And again, the first movie had a really problematic script too, and that was Kurtzman and Orsi. But it had all these things that worked, and it sets them up as a team. And that movie ends, and you like all the characters, and you like where they're left, right? And it's like, okay, yes, they're the crew of the fucking Enterprise now. I can't wait for what comes next. And the first thing this movie does is take Kirk's ship away and put everything back to... It resets everything.
Exactly. And take Scotty back away.
For what purpose, too? Right. Just exactly. So he can coincidentally end up on the big warship so he can...
I had the same thought.
It repeats so many of the things, so many beats from the first movie, to the point where they're literally pointing to, like, Pike sits down with Kirk. And I like the scenes with Pike and Kirk. I think those are all really good. But he literally says, like, hey, I met you in a bar like this, remember? And you had that fight. It's like, yeah, we all saw the first Star Trek. We remember. You don't... let's play the Beastie Boys again, because we did that last time, and that seemed to be popular. So right off the bat, the movie was frustrating me because I felt like it was taking away all the things that I liked where it landed the first movie. I literally lost my place in terms of talking about...
We're talking about Ghost Protocol. Guys, I liked it. I didn't want to give all the Oscars to Tom Cruise. That's all. I liked
it. Yeah, instead of what, the King's Speech? So is that better? No, good is point. It you want to live in that world?
Good point.
It's, I don't know if you guys have the experience when you're watching a movie. Like, a movie will have these little things, and you're willing to forgive them. It's like a little kid, like, poking you, you know? And then eventually...
It's like being friends with Adam Beta.
Yes. And then eventually, like, that one makes you snap, and you're like, okay, really? The one that made me snap was them calling the other Spock. And I was I was like, how much greater would this movie have been if they discover Khan just betrayed us? Rather than have Spock be like, listen, he's going to betray you. Like, no. I would rather see Spock have to, come up with something on the fly rather than be able to call his shot.
Totally, you are absolutely right. 100%. Again, they bring back Spock Prime because they did that in the last movie. Mm-hmm. And because I feel like someone in the audience might not know who Khan is. And so they need a guy saying, like, yeah, Khan is a guy who's established and he's a bad guy. Like,
who cares?
Is he talking to the non-fans? I don't know. But yeah, I felt like in a movie with a lot of sort of insulting moments, I thought that was one of the most insulting.
What did you think of Khan? And that, like, to me, I thought it was, I like Benedict Cumberbatch is fine, but I thought it was very one note, pretty uninteresting.
I didn't even totally understand his motivations.
He
wants his crew back, but to sort of wage war and commit acts of terrorism, again, you know, but when The Hobbit came out, they showed, like, the first 10 minutes of this movie, and it was the big opening on the volcano, and it was Mickey with his sick daughter, and Khan saying, I can save her.
I think J.J. Abrams is a big British TV fan.
Yeah.
He's kind of got a few in there.
I want to get into that in a minute.
And it's like, oh, interesting, because at this point we still don't know that he's Khan or whatever. So the first time I see the movie, I'm like, yeah, I saw this before. The second time I saw it, it really kind of bummed me out because I like so much of what it sets up. I like the first half of this movie way more than I like the second half, with all the sort of resetting Kirk and having him and Spock bicker and whatever. But when we get back to those scenes with, like, the sick daughter and Khan saying, I can save her, and he has to blow up the thing. And I was like, oh, this sets up a way more interesting thing than what is eventually revealed to be the case, which is I'm Khan. And somebody in the comments, maybe in the Wrath of Khan article, piece that we posted a couple of weeks ago, said, like, every Star Trek movie since Wrath of Khan has basically had Khan as the villain, you know.
That's interesting.
And so maybe that's why he seems so one note. His performance is fine, and I liked the scenes where he was like a Superman and kicking ass. You know, the scene where he takes out all the Klingons was pretty cool, and the scene where he beats up everybody on the ship, that's all pretty cool. But I don't totally understand, not to compare it to the original Wrath of Khan, but like That guy had motivation.
Yes.
This guy, I feel like, doesn't as much, because I don't feel like where it lands, which is I want my crew back, gels with the first half of the movie, which is I'm setting up weird terrorist plots and pulling because, off yeah, Godfather like, 3 style shootouts. And
Kirk doesn't, I mean, with Wrath of Khan, even though I didn't see the original Khan episode when I saw Wrath of Khan for the first time, and I still got, oh,
right.
He doesn't like Kirk, you know?
Right.
And then you, right. you go back and you watch the episode and it makes right. a lot more sense,
right.
but there that didn't happen in this timeline.
Right.
So
I would have been fine with them, again, it's a total lack of imagination, but if they had just sort of redone Space Seed, I might have had less of a problem. But the way that the way that they try and shoehorn in Wrath of Khan in the last 15 minutes is really offensive to me. And again, not because I hold the first one dear, although I do. It's because to me it's just bad filmmaking.
Yes.
It's unmotivated. The original Wrath of Khan, all of the stuff that's in the movie makes sense. It all is tied together by this one theme, which is this idea of the past catches up with you. And it's about Kirk's past catching up with him. Khan is this guy from his past that he has forgotten and abandoned on this planet who comes back and now wants to kill him. Spock dies because the past has caught up with him. Carol Marcus is a woman from his past who reveals that Kirk has a son that he didn't know about because the past has caught up with him. All of these things make sense. They're all part of a theme. This movie, they're all in the movie because somebody else did it before. So Kirk dies, I guess, to teach him to take responsibility. Again, what the movie sets up in the beginning is you skate by on luck, and Kirk says, like, I haven't lost a crew member. It would have made more sense to kill somebody else. That would have been him taking responsibility.
Yes.
He would have finally lost a crew member. He wouldn't have skated by on luck. He'd have to pay for those actions with somebody else's life. That would make more sense. Him sacrificing himself doesn't tie into what this movie sets up as the theme. Carol Marcus being there, it's just because she was in Wrath of Khan. So, like, they're going to redo it. And listen, Alice Eve is very pretty, and the shot of her in her underwear is, she looks great, whatever, but I am so infuriated.
Okay, so we all agree that we like that about the movie.
It infuriates me every time I see that shot. It infuriates me. It's in all of the marketing,
yeah.
It's in the movie, and it's, like, the most offensive thing, because they don't even come up with, like, a punchline to get out of that scene.
They don't.
It's literally just like, turn around, I'm going to take my clothes off. And next scene. At least get a joke, have some sort of button on that scene to justify it, even the littlest bit. We could all say, okay, we know why it's there, but at least they're pretending it's this other thing. Mm-hmm. Nope.
Can we all agree that Billy Piper should have been cast?
You're such a dork.
I spent the entire movie looking at her thinking, like, Billy Piper should be playing this part.
For what purpose, though? Like,
because Billy Piper should be in every movie.
I'm just saying, they gave her nothing to do.
No, I understand. I just mean, simply when she came on the screen, she reminded me of Billy Piper. And
right.
Me Billy Piper in that movie, that's all. No, I agree.
It makes me crazy, that shot of her in her underwear. And it shouldn't, right? It's such a metaphor for this whole movie.
No,
it's just like, I should like all of these things. Why are they making me mad?
So wait, girl in the underwear we like, scene we don't like.
I mean, underwear they should not have even had. It makes me crazy. It's so shameless. And like, I just feel like too much of this movie is like a big fuck you. And I know it's not supposed to be. Like, I know they wanted to make a good movie. And again, I like the cast and there's scenes that I like where they're sort of bouncing off each other and that's all good. And
I really like the opening, which I also had seen before The Hobbit.
Right.
But I love...
That's them working as a team.
Right. And that got me excited after seeing The Hobbit. And it seemed like it seemed absolutely like a carryover from the previous
film.
Right.
Now they're a team and they're having adventures.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. But still the same, you know, dynamics amongst characters. I really... watching it again, that scene, I got super excited all over again. Like, oh no, 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 no! I'm gonna totally dig this movie, and then it never quite lived up to that.
Because again, where it ends, I mean, the only real twist on where it ends versus where the 2009 one ends is like, now they're going to be in space for 5 years, but it's literally the same last scene where it's just like they're all on the bridge and they're a crew now, and it's
Kirk walks into the bridge, does that little pause.
Did this already. The only difference is they're going to be gone for longer, and we're supposed to be again excited because like, oh, on the show they were on a 5-year mission. Now they're going to be on the It took two movies for them to now be on the 5-year mission. How am I supposed to be excited about that? The first one again. Very flawed, but it does some things right and sets up a lot. You can forgive a lot of things because of what it sets up.
Correct.
And so the sequel needs to take that to build from there.
And they just set everything up again.
Kind of, yeah.
Well, but, okay. So, I want to talk about some things that I like, okay? Yep. I liked... the feeling that they're setting up something with the Klingons.
Okay.
I kind of dug that, and that made me excited to see, like, I want to see the Klingons next. Like, that's who I want to see.
Sure.
I don't want anything else but that. Don't give me Gorn or whatever. Like, give me Klingons next. Because I thought the kind of reimagination of the Klingons, I thought they looked awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was cool.
I liked their ships. I liked their like little masks that they wore. I liked when they took the masks off, what they looked like. I thought that was all really, really fun. Yeah. So that made me excited for another movie.
But again, why not tie that into this movie more? Because I walk away from this movie now and it just feels like more fan service. Like, we did a scene with Klingons because people like Klingons. So.
I agree, and that's what it turned out to be. But I also was excited with the redesign and just think, because now I thought maybe Klingons are now a part of that. I was unaware that this would be, you know, it might be more Klingon heavy, and I thought it'd be woven into
the armor part. Was cool, the planet was cool, all that stuff is cool, and I just wish, again, you know, part of the problem is the marketing, and J.J. Abrams takes a lot of blame for that, where it's like he wants to keep every single aspect, including who characters are playing, a secret. But, you know, a twist could have been that the back half of the movie was sort of about this Klingon conflict.
That Peter Weller is trying
to get going. Like, make that... Throw in Khan if you have to, but surprise us by saying, like, but that's not what this movie is. It's actually... This Peter Weller is the bad guy, and it's about sort of starting shit with the Klingons, and make that the second half of your movie instead of just relying on Khan to carry the second
half. And I thought, like, with the term Into Darkness, because I got that feeling about halfway through the movie, like, as I'm watching this, and they're going to the Klingon homeworld, and you realize that they're trying to start a war, and I was like, how great would this be if they start a war?
Right.
Like, that's the end of this movie, is now we're, like... the Federation's at war with the Klingon Empire. How fun would that be?
People, you know, probably would have lost their shit, like Star Trek fans, because again, that's not really what Star Trek is. But if you're trying to, and that's the thing, it's like we're redefining ourselves. But no, you're not. You're just going back to the well, guys. Don't say you're, you know, marking out new territory when you're just remaking Wrath of Khan. I had said, you know, when they announced Into Darkness and the first trailer is like, oh, this does look darker, and we were all worried about sort of the Nolanization of Star Trek and like, oh, are they going to go dark now? Because one of the things we liked about the first one was that it was up and fun.
Yes.
And for the most part, I feel like this one is, although if you pay attention, like, well, there is a way, it's way more violent. There's a way higher body count, including at the end when, for no good reason, the Enterprise crash lands in San Francisco and like takes out several buildings. Like, we have to assume that thousands of people died, right?
Right.
For what purpose? So we can be happy that the Enterprise landed safely? Like, I just don't understand why. It's this whole thing about, because we can, we should. And it's like, well, we can make buildings collapse through the miracle of computer-generated imagery. Let's do that. But, like, you have to take responsibility for the images that you're showing. And at the opening of the movie, they're going to wage war with Khan because he blew up this archive and killed, I think, 47 people. Yes. And that sucks. And you're like, 47 people, but before you get the number, you think it could have been hundreds. You don't know. Mm-hmm. So you're almost relieved to only hear 47. And they're going to go to war over that. And now here we are at the end, and thousands of people are dying, and we're just supposed to be like, oh, but the Enterprise is safe, so great job.
All good.
Just having, just land them in the water. Like, no, don't okay. take out buildings just because it's a neat, expensive computer effect, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, it's a nitpick, but it goes back to, I don't feel like these are nitpicks because they all sort of support the argument of what are the intentions of these filmmakers? What is it that they're trying to do? And I don't, I guess I just don't agree with what their intentions are.
Do you think they'll, I think there'll be a Star Trek 3. Do you think they'll be back for Star Trek 3?
No, I do not.
You don't think all these guys,
Abrams is moving on.
Okay. He's going to go do Star Wars. Yeah. He unfortunately just basically says he has no interest in Star Trek. It got him Star Wars, great. And let him go make Star Wars.
You know what's weird?
Give somebody else Star Trek, please.
The first time around in 2009 when he did this, and he said that he was not a fan of Star Trek before making this movie. I don't know. I read that as he had nothing against Star Trek. Yeah. He just wasn't a fan. But this time around, however, I feel...
Because this time it feels more like a fuck you.
I don't know why,
but it does.
It does.
Like, I'm going to come into your universe and I'm going to blow up everything.
Yeah, exactly. I feel the same way, that it didn't bother me last time, because again, he reinvigorated this franchise that was sort of dormant, and it was like, great, he made this a thing again, and now we're going to get more Star Trek movies. Awesome! And now, after this one, I'm not as excited about the prospect of another Star Trek movie. I'm really not, and that's a huge bummer.
I liked the amount of action in the movie. Yeah. There is more, I would say that there's more action in this movie than the entire 80-plus episodes of the first original series. So, I mean...
True, but that wasn't what the show was about.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, it's definitely... It feels different than Star Trek does just by that. I mean, there's a lot of action in this
because he's making a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
And again, he's... J.J. Abrams is really good at sort of these individual sequences. And the first... The 2009 Star Trek, the same thing is true. That's a movie that works in pieces. When you add them up, they don't quite add up. But there's enough of a connective tissue, and again, you're excited enough that you can overlook a lot of things. This movie, again, works in sequences, but I think they don't add up even as well as the 2009 did. And because I feel like the last half hour kind of shits the bed, I think the movie suffers even more. But yeah, I mean, when you consider, like, there's the volcano sequence, there's the sequence on Klingon, there's the fight scene at the end on those big floating trash things. I mean, it's a cool fight scene, you know, the way they're jumping around from thing to thing.
And I like seeing Spock, a little badass.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's cool. When he screams Khan, are we supposed to laugh? Oh,
God, it was so bad.
I don't know what we're supposed to think besides fuck you. Do they really think that it's clever enough just to put them on opposite sides of the glass? Like, that's how we're twisting it.
They must.
That's not enough. And like you, I kept thinking, because we all know, because they've set up Khan Superblood with Magic Tribble.
It's the name of my band, by the
way.
Not Dragon Sound.
We all know where it's going. Like, we know Kirk is not going to stay dead because we have super con blood. So why not then subvert the scene that we're all familiar with by just not having him die? Like you said, like, twist it sooner. Even have him be irradiated. That's fine. And like, oh, he's sick. And as Spock is talking to him, somebody says, oh shit, wait, the Tribble. Let's go get Khan Superblood before Kirk dies. And then he's fine. And we don't get a needless, pointless, meaningless death for our hero. And, you know, we sort of subvert this scene that we are already familiar with.
Yep.
I'm not saying it's like... I don't think that's a great way of doing that scene. I wish they just wouldn't have done Wrath of Khan at all, but at least it's a little bit different because it's Rob Zombie's Halloween. It's just like, we're different. And now we're shot for shot the same. And why is that good? I don't know. I don't know why that's good.
I'm going to pull an Adam Beta and say it changed my mind a little bit. I think I was a little hard on Khan. Maybe one note's not the right way to put it. I don't know. There was no... I don't know. Here we are complaining that we want them to do something different with Khan, and maybe when he wasn't as charismatic, maybe for want of a better word, as the previous Khan, I was turned off by that. I don't know. I didn't love it. To me, it's a pretty not memorable.
I think that you hit the nail on the head with this is the type of movie that I'm going to go home. I'll buy it when it comes out on Blu-ray, and I'll be like, you know what was a great scene? I'm going to fast forward to this.
Well, that
scene.
I can't do.
But I guess I know, because I forgot who I'm speaking with right now. But, you know, there are great sequences that it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
And again, when I watched it the second time, it was more sort of that way, that it was like, okay, now we're at this part, and I'll just watch this, and now we're at this part, and I'll just enjoy this, and so I sort of was able to enjoy it as an action movie, but I do not understand the choices made for a lot of this movie. I don't like him firing Scotty before Scotty gets on board.
No.
Again, I guess
keep
just
the crew together.
Right. That's why we like the show. Don't put Chekhov down in engineering, because why? And so he can run around and be like, I can't get it to work, Captain. For the whole movie.
Right, exactly.
Have everybody on the bridge. Like, yep. Except for Scotty, where, you know, he doesn't belong on the bridge. But, like, have everybody on the bridge. Make them a team.
It's like you want to see... When you read Justice League, you want to see the Justice League doing the things that they're good at. You don't want them to be like, Batman, go in the water. Aquaman, go up on this building. Like, you want them to say, like, do the things they're good at.
Yeah.
No, I agree. And we were waiting for the second movie so we could see them all together.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because we spent an entire movie getting them together.
Exactly. And then right away
we get one scene of them together, and then we just go back to where we were when the first movie started. And I don't know. It's not fair to say that that's bad writing just because it's not what I want.
Right.
But it is kind of bad writing because it's repeating exactly what has been done before. And I just feel like this used to be, you know, the case with sequels. When they used to make sequels, it was always just, let's repeat the thing that we did the last time. And that was how it was. But sort of in the new mentality of franchise filmmaking, they're much more about continuing a story now than they are just about repeating the events of the last movie.
Sure.
And we've sort of gotten used to that, and comic book movies are great for that, because there's always the first movie that's, like, flawed, but leaves much to be improved upon. And then the second one is a lot of times when they get shit right.
Yeah. Take Cowboy 2.
Exactly.
I was seconds away. Seconds away. And so that's what I wanted from this movie, was let's take all the things, you know, the first movie left much to be built upon. Let's build from there and make something new and special. And instead they said, well, people like this other Star Trek movie, let's do that. And then let's lie about doing it so that the big reveal is we are creatively bankrupt, which was a great reveal. To me.
Sure.
Now, so we know Abrams wasn't a Trek fan. I mean, I get the sense also that the writers literally, like, looked up a book, like picked up a book or
they
or
are,
just,
though, Trekkies, aren't they?
I don't know.
Are they Trekkies or they just...
Lindelof was a Next Generation guy.
Okay.
I don't know about the other two.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. I know Bob Orsi is like a conspiracy nut, and so
yes,
that's kind of why I think some of that Iraq war stuff is in there. And again, very heavy-handed, but at least if the movie had sort of gone in that direction, at least it is sort of something different. I'm not saying it's good, but I wish they had thought of something. Or if they're going to do Khan, then again...
Do something new with Khan.
Do something new with Khan. We've seen Wrath of Khan, and you guys have gone out of your way to create a new universe in which there is a new continuity. We're supposed to think that in two totally different timelines, the same guy exists and gets us to the same point where two characters are on opposite sides of the glass, one dying from radiation poisoning, and they speak the same dialogue to one another. You know, ship out of danger, like all these. And then, because the writing in this.
I've never seen Patrick this fired up before.
Yeah, you should listen to the Phantom Menace podcast. because the writing is kind of bad in the movie, we have to have Kirk and Spock speak the subtext. So Spock says, you know, Kirk says, "You used what he wanted against him. That's a good move," or something. And Spock says, "That's what you would have done." Okay. I'll buy it. But then we go a step further, and Kirk says, "And this is what you would have done." Oh, and it's like, you guys have really switched places. Look at that. And is that what the movie's about? Is it about getting Kirk and Spock to the point where they understand one another better?
I think that...
Is that the overall theme of the movie?
I get very annoyed with movies, and this happens more, I think, with modern movies, that they are going to tell you what's happening instead of just showing you what's happening. And
all the time.
The scene starts out so well when they've got this the Klingon ship that they have captured, and they're going to go to Kronos, and they're going to... And it's Uhura and Spock and Kirk, and Uhura and Spock start arguing,
yeah.
And Kirk has this, like, really, we're going to do this now? Like, yeah. It was a great moment, but then, yeah. Like, it just goes into Spock being like, well, this is how I'm feeling,
right.
And
right.
I'm going to tell you how. Like, no, just show me this. I right. don't need to know this.
And that is seems like it's going to be a thread that runs throughout the movie, this idea of Spock facing his death and not feeling anything or whatever. And right at that scene, it sort of gets abandoned. It pops up again at the end when he's saying goodbye to Kirk, and he says, "Teach me how you not to feel." And Spock, instead of saying, like, "We don't really have time for that," he says,
"It kind of takes 100 years.
Right now I am failing," because he's crying. And that's all fine. That's not the worst, whatever. But it is, again, this idea of speaking the subtext. It introduces things in the beginning that it seems very uninterested in exploring, and then every once in a while I'll be like, oh, right, we were going to talk about this. Let's throw this in at the end here. Gosh, what was it? There was something else I was going to say, and now I don't remember what it was. So you guys say something else about Star Trek, and then I'll remember.
No, I was going to say before that, I think there's this weird reluctance in Hollywood to... Well, I'm not saying anything earth-shattering. Everybody knows this. Hollywood is reluctant to try anything new. And I think...
Because of, like, look at what Cloud Atlas. That was more new than you could ever get.
We have... Okay, Disney acquires Star Wars. And they say, we're going to do... And not only are we going to continue the series, we're going to have 7, 8, 9. We're going to do standalone Star Wars movies. And maybe I'm alone in this, but I was excited by that prospect. Like, well, that's fucking cool. Like, do something new with this... With this universe, they're going to do young Han Solo and Yoda, and I want to strangle someone and say, like, no, you have do something new. You now have an opportunity to show us new characters. You know, I mean, there were rumors, and I'm getting on a totally different tangent now, I realize, but there were rumors that Zack Snyder was going to do like a Seven Samurai sort of. It's a Jedi version of Seven Samurai. And I was like, yeah, that's fucking cool. That's cool as fuck. I'm on board with that. But no. They quickly shot that down and said, no, we're going to do young Han Solo and Yoda instead. My point being here with Star Trek, with a chance, like you said, to do something new. But it's like, it just, people are scared. And like, no, no.
They realize that the prequels didn't work.
Well,
and we're in this age of prequels and reboots now where... everything kind of has a prequel, and that's, you know, sort of what the 2009 Star Trek was. It was, while it was a reboot, it was sort of a prequel. How did this team get together? And so, okay, I can overlook certain aspects because it does work as a prequel. And so now, again, now you've established yourself. Now go do something new, forge new territory. Nope, we're going to do young Han Solo. You know, we're going to redo Wrath of Khan. Literally the same part two.
It's just frustrating.
It is, because again, for us to say, like, do something new with the 12th Star Trek movie based on a TV show that's 45 years old. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing new to begin with. You're doing a Star Trek movie. Right. Like, but do a new Star Trek movie. Don't just remake a Star Trek movie that already exists.
Right. You know what I think happened?
What?
On the reboot.
Yes.
It completely altered the universe, because as we know, in the original Star Trek series movies, the even ones are good, and the odd ones are bad. Now, maybe the odd ones are going to be good. So I am looking forward to Star Trek 3.
To be honest, I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing we'll get another one because Paramount, you know, gets money and whatever. But this movie, I think, already made less in its opening weekend than the first one did in 2009. Now, that's with a 3D upcharge. That's
IMAX.
Although the first one did play in some IMAX, but not as wide. That's with higher ticket prices already, and that's with what should be much more positive sort of tracking going in, because so many people liked the last one, you know? So it's like everybody should be more, and yet fewer people are seeing this one. And I have a feeling that word of mouth is going to kill this one faster than it did the first. One of the things that made the first one a success was everybody came back saying, oh my gosh, that was so fun and good. And other people would go. And this movie, I think, word of mouth is going to kill it a little bit. A lot of people are liking it. A lot of people are saying it's fun. It's entertaining. And it is.
Yeah, you
know? It's fun. I'm going to watch it again.
Yeah.
So I know I've done nothing but complain about it for like the last hour. I'm very frustrated by it.
I look forward to the search for Kirk. next...
I kind of like Search for Spock too, which throws off the evens odds thing for me.
See, not to get on a Star Trek thing, the thing that kills Star Trek 3, Search for Spock, for me is your climax. The last 20 minutes is like this long Vulcan ceremony.
Yeah.
It's like you had the end and then you went on this longer tangent at the end of it. That's what I don't like about that movie. But okay. I agree with you. I do like Search for Spock.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for that, like 20 minutes at the end of it.
My problems with Search for Spock are what it does to Kirk's son, which is this weird afterthought.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's a new Sarek who I don't really like. Or Sarek, not Sarek. Sorry. Sarek is Spock's dad. Sarek. I'm not a fan of Sarek in that movie, but whatever. Who cares? Kirstie Alley should have come back, is what I'm saying. Why didn't they have Sarek in this movie? I mean, they did in the last one.
Why not?
So what
Let's
the hell?
Do it.
At one point, before he wakes up from his coma, Kirk hears his parents naming him. Did you guys notice that? They play audio of Chris Hemsworth and Jennifer Morrison saying, like, let's name him Jim. It's like, oh, he remembers that? That's weird, but okay. Again, now that's a fucking nitpick. Again, I'm not me. That's not me saying like, here's why that's a bad movie. But it's just, you have to. It's all about intent, right? And what were they intending?
So if you could have you're in charge of the studio, and you guys know this stuff a lot more than I do. You can have your next person who's going to direct the next Star Trek movie. Who do you choose?
Gosh, that's really hard. I don't know.
Okay.
I really don't. Because, you know, obviously I think there are filmmakers who could probably do a more thoughtful, you know, you could say, Duncan Jones, he's done sort of thoughtful science fiction before. Mm-hmm. But I like the sort of thrill ride vibe that J.J. Abrams gave it. I know that that's not the Star Trek TV show, and I know that's why a lot of people didn't like the 2009 reboot, because it took a show that was about a lot of things and turned it into a movie that's about nothing. But I liked the energy of it, so I'm not anti J.J. Abrams directing Star Trek. I guess my problem is with the writers that he picks, because I think they wrote a bad script that is salvaged by J.J. Abrams' direction and the cast, who is really good once again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really love Chris Pine.
They're great, man. Everybody in that movie is great.
Yeah.
They're really good.
Yeah. Anything else about Star Trek Into Darkness?
No, I did overall.
I did
enjoy
the movie.
It's flawed. And I was, you know, a little disappointed, but I think there will be a three, and I think I actually, look forward to it. 'Cause again, I just look forward to spending time with those characters.
In theory, I should want to also, but I find myself now not excited about the prospect of a third movie. I'm just like, I'll just watch old Star Trek. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'll just put on season one and watch that instead of... Listen, if they make another one, of course I'm going to go see it the first day. A trailer start coming out, I'll get excited, especially if they tell me new people are writing it. It's like, hey, a clean slate, you know, and I'll be excited about it. But really, if you... Where I was in 2009 after seeing that movie and where I am now are very different places.
Because you weren't even really a Star Trek fan until after that.
I literally, the whole weekend I saw that movie, the only thing I said to my wife was, I only want to watch Star Trek for the rest of my life. Like, over and over, that's what I said.
That happens to you.
Yeah.
Are you disappointed when you start watching Star Trek and you realize it's not like the movie?
No, because it's awesome.
Okay, I agree.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I'm a huge Trekkie.
Not at all. No, I loved it. To the point where I was loving bad episodes because I was like, I don't care. Last night, there's like a UHF channel that shows Star Trek on Saturday nights, and they were showing Miri, and like, Miri's not a good episode at all, but I'm like, I don't care, because this is Star Trek.
You know you've gone to a dark place when you're like, I want to watch Voyager again. I really don't like Voyager.
I haven't watched much of Voyager, although I've seen more Voyager than I have Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine
is your favorite. And I put on Deep Space Nine, I got about 20 minutes into the pilot, and I didn't turn it off because like, this is bad, but like, it's rough. Like, Avery Brooks in the first 20 minutes of the pilot is rough.
Dude,
it's rough. I know I'm going to stick with it. I know it gets way better. A lot of people love it and swear by it. So
there's two episodes that, like, Star Trek has this way of, within the first probably 3 minutes, you can be like, oh, this is going to suck. Like, there's one episode it's in the first, there's only two really bad episodes of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
And one of them, it's
the opening scene. The first 20 minutes of the pilot.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
But it's the first, it's the chief, and the chief's, like, daughter is reading a story, and then Rumpelstiltskin is sitting next to her reading the story with her, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a piece of shit. It's like...
That's who was missing from Into Darkness.
Yes, they needed Rumpelstiltskin.
Bring him back for part three. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm sorry if you all love Star Trek Into Darkness. I'm so sick of being this guy, so I apologize, but...
This is a very dark podcast. This podcast went into darkness.
It's a podcast into darkness. Next weekend, Fast and Furious 6 come out. I have a feeling I'm going to be way more upbeat about that one, and I don't understand how I got to this point in my life, but...
We were watching... We used to mock the first Fast and the Furious movie. That moment, it was on TV the other day, that moment when Vin Diesel... yells out Nas, and then the entire car blows up. Oh my god, I laugh every time.
Summer just yelling at it.
But like, no. Man, Fast 5 is fun.
Yes.
That's a fun movie, and I hope we get that in 6.
So now if it's Fast and Furious Into Darkness, then the comparison holds, I guess. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you. Thank you, Adam Beta.
No, no problem.
Thank you, Mike.
Please
come back sooner.
Will do.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Adam, do you know the original? Can you hum the original music? Mr. Bromley, take us out.